In our second of six division previews for the 2011-2012 season, Pucked in the Head looks at the Central Division. We've got two original six teams with story histories and recent Stanley Cups. We've got two recent expansion teams and their decade or so of futility. And we've got the St. Louis Blues, who kind of fall in between. They do, however, share a very, very ignominious, yes, ignominious, record with the Vancouver Canucks. We'll find out all about that in Pucked in the Head's Central Division Preview. All right, Chris, welcome back from your holiday. You were just down in good old Disneyland.
Yes, thank you very much. It certainly is the happiest place on earth. Also made it down to San Diego, which is a lovely city. If you haven't been there, I highly recommend it.
So did you get down to the San Diego Zoo?
We did. We did the zoo. We did SeaWorld and just drove around the city a little bit. Very, very beautiful city.
Did you bring me anything back with you, man?
No, I did bring your lovely daughter something.
All right. She gets everything now. You know that?
I think you're going to have to put up with that for a while,
yeah,
my friend.
Yeah. We are doing something a little bit different this week.
We are. I was unable to find my way out to your place of work or your residence, so here we are on Skype.
Yes.
And, it's a bit of a work in progress. But if the sound quality is a little bit lower than what your listeners are used to, we apologize, but that's the reason.
I actually don't apologize, because it's all your fault, Chris.
All right, well then I apologize.
But just from a strict tech geek point of view, I'm rather excited because I have a new microphone. For any of you guys out there who like the sound of my voice this week, I am now using an Audio Technica microphone, and it's quite beautiful.
Well, we are here to preview the Central
Right,
Division.
Right, we're not talking about gear and stuff, are we?
We are not.
The Central Division, and I was assigned the dirty, rotten, stinking Chicago Blackhawks.
You actually assigned them to yourself.
Well, I was assigned them by me. But the Chicago Blackhawks, they kind of backed into the playoffs last year, as you might remember. They dropped by 15 points from their Stanley Cup year. They had a bit of a hangover last year. They only got 97 points. They finished third in the division. And in fact, as of the last day of the season, they had a chance to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, they lost to Detroit on the final day and had to rely on Dallas losing their game.
Which they did. Of course, relying on Dallas to lose last year was a pretty good bet.
It was, but I mean, you think that playing a team that's already been eliminated and you'll win and you're in, you'd think Dallas could come up with a victory against, I think it was Minnesota, but it didn't happen.
Well, let's talk to the Boston Red Sox about that.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. How about that baseball?
We'll save that for another day.
All right. Well, what say you about the Blackhawks, Jason?
Well, as I mentioned, they backed their way into the playoffs. Vancouver manhandled them in the first three games, but then they kind of woke up. They got Dave Bolin back into the lineup for the fourth game. He came back despite still possibly suffering some concussion symptoms. He came back. He scored 6 points in four games, helped the Blackhawks win three in a row to tie the series at three, and it went to game seven overtime. The question is, this season, who shows up? Is it the Chicago Blackhawks who kind of sleptwalked through the entire season last year? Or is it the Blackhawks who showed up and reminded people that they were a force to be reckoned with in the last four games of the playoffs last year? And they did a few things in the offseason. They signed defenseman Steve Matador and Sean O'Donnell and Sammy Lepisto. So they've shored up the back end a little bit. They got rid of the massive salary to Brian Campbell, sending him to Florida. And they also signed a couple of guys up front. They signed Andrew Burnett at 38 years old. He's a good depth guy to have on the team. And as always, he brings with him a blonde and redhead. And Dan Carcillo, who brings some more of the grit to the team. The question is it going to be grit that is like sandpaper? Or is it going to be grit like sand in your bathing suit? That's the question.
Well, what is your take on Carcillo? Because, you know, I just looked at his stats. He played 57 games last year, and he was over 2 penalty minutes per game.
Yes. So as I said, he's the kind of guy that can help you out of a scrape because, I mean, he's willing to do what it takes to get under the other guy's skin. Okay. However, they've already got that in Dave Boland, and Dave Boland is the kind of guy who can put up points on the board as well. Dan Carcillo, not the brightest guy in the league. When he got signed to Chicago, he started trash-talking against Tanner Glass and Rafi Torres of the Vancouver Canucks when they had already signed with other teams.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like coming to my house and trash-talking me by talking about my ex-wife, my crazy ex-wife that I don't like anymore.
Well, I don't think Daniel Carcillo being dumb was a particularly great shock to anybody. Do you think the Chicago Blackhawks have improved over last year?
I do.
In what way?
I think a couple of ways. First of all, I think that they've got a deeper defense core. Steve Monitor brings some you know, good, just solid. I mean, he's not a superstar. He's just solid. Sean O'Donnell, Samuel Pisto, these are guys who, you know, they put in their minutes and they're reliable. Again, they're not going to shine, but they're reliable.
Okay, but they also dropped Brian Campbell, Chris Campoli, and Jordan Hendry.
Jordan Hendry doesn't do anything for me, for example.
Well, Campoli is, you know what, he's going to be known in Chicago for a long time for giving the puck away to Alex Burrows for that overtime winner
right.
last year.
And this is the kind of thing that I think guys like Monitor, O'Donnell, and Lepisto are more steady. And they're not going to make a play like that.
They're not going to make any kind of play, really. They haven't brought in anybody on the back end who can really skate. They haven't brought in anybody who can move the puck. And they lost a lot of that. You know, as overpaid as the guy was, Brian Campbell was a smooth skater who could move the puck.
This is a team that is going to have Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook logging nearly 30 minutes a night, right? So now they've just got to divide up the other 30 minutes amongst their bottom six defensemen. They've got enough bodies on the back end that they can do that.
Okay. I'm not convinced by what
okay.
they've done.
They've still got one of the most dangerous top five forward groups in the league.
Definitely.
Jonathan Toews. He has improved his points per game each year he's been in the league. He got 76 points last year. There's no reason that he cannot continue to improve that. Patrick Kane is coming off wrist surgery. He scored 73 points last year. He was dead in the playoffs, but he had an injury. This is a guy that honestly I think has a possibility of being a top five scorer in this league. As much as I don't like him as a person, I think he's a dynamite player. Marian Hossa only got 57 points last year in 65 games, mind you. And this is a guy who has already said he's dedicating this season to fellow Czech Pavel Dimitra. Dimitra, of course, is a Slovakian.
Slovakian.
Former countryman, right? Patrick Sharp was re-signed, and he scored 71 points last year. Dave Boland, back from concussion, he only scored 37 points in 61 games last year. But as I said, when it comes down to games that matter, he scored 6 points in 4 games against Vancouver in last year. He tied for the team lead, even though he only played 4 games of that 7-game series. This is a solid top six.
They had the same solid top six last year. They backed their way into the playoffs. What have they done to improve?
They were young, and they were coming off a Stanley Cup. They partied their butts off all summer. So this year, they're angry. Like, they were pissed the way they lost to Vancouver last year. And I honestly think this is a dangerous team.
Okay. Haven't sold me, mainly because everything that they did was about toughness. This was a team that won a Stanley Cup based primarily on skill.
What did they do about toughness exactly? How is signing Andrew Burnett and Patrick Sharp, how are these toughness moves?
Okay, well, re-signing Sharp is fine. But, I mean, adding Andrew Burnett, a 37-year-old goal scorer, is he 38 now? Okay, well, he that was really their one offensive signing. And if all you're adding to your offense is a 38-year-old guy who is really an unknown quantity at his age, I don't know that you've added much.
They re-signed Michael Frolik, who they acquired late last year from Florida. They managed to re-sign him because it was a contract year for him. They re-signed Victor Stahlberg. They re-signed Patrick Sharp, as I mentioned. They also signed free agents Jamal Mayers and Brett McLean. I don't know much about McLean, but those are the signings they made. So as I said, I think that this is a dangerous team. The big question is, I think Corey Crawford last year in his rookie season was 33-18-6. He was 15 games over 500 last year as a rookie. The question is, can Alex Salak and Alec Richards do better than Marty Turco's 11-11-3 record as a backup? That's the question. Because I think Corey Crawford is the real deal.
He certainly looked like it. Look, I don't think that they're going to be a bad team. I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs. I just don't see how these guys have improved. I think they've added basically 2 to 4 minutes per game of penalty killing time.
I give them 102 points, and I think that there's a distinct chance they take the division.
Moving right along, you asked me to have a look at the Detroit Red Wings.
Once again, in the dirty, rotten, stinking category.
You think so? I've got a lot more respect for the Red Wings. I've got respect for the way Ken Holland builds a team. He doesn't tend to bring in the kind of, well, for lack of a better word, assholes that the Chicago Blackhawks bring in.
Okay, I mean, certainly since the mid-90s, this has been a team to reckon with.
Yes.
And even since the early 90s, I mean, when Steve Yzerman was really in his heyday, I mean, this is a team that has won 4 Stanley Cups since 1997. Probably the only team with that kind of record is New Jersey Devils. And New Jersey is not still getting 100 points a season like the Red Wings are.
All right.
The Red Wings always seem to find somebody.
Yeah. So this offseason, you mentioned during the Chicago Review that Marian Hossa has dedicated his season to Pavel Dimitra. The Detroit Red Wings have a similar situation. Ruslan Saleh made the decision to go to the KHL. And he was on Lokomotiv, and he was on that plane as well. So they're missing a friend who passed away.
And Brad McCrimmon, of course, played for the Red Wings as well.
He did, yes.
The coach for Lokomotiv.
They lost an awful lot of experience this year. Mike Modano, retired. Chris Osgood, retired. Chris Draper, retired. Brian Rafalski, somewhat unexpectedly, retired. Nicholas Lidstrom chose to come back for one more year. This is probably the third one more year in a row, I think, for him, isn't it?
I believe so.
It's unbelievable what he does. He could still win the Norris Trophy at the end of the season. It's not by no means out of the question. To replace Rafalski, they had a bit of a task. They brought in Ian White, Mike Commodore, who, by the way, is going to have the best jersey in the league.
Only if he chooses the number 64.
I believe he did.
Did he? I heard that he was thinking about it and then backed off of it.
Oh, you are right, sir. He chose number 22.
It's unfortunate because I think they would have sold a heck of a lot of those jerseys.
They certainly would have.
But I'm not sure. I believe that there was actually some kind of corporate agenda there, that there's still somebody out there who owns the Commodore 64 name that was threatening to ask for compensation. And so he just said, forget it. But that, I don't know. I don't know that for sure.
Well, Jimmy Howard is their number one goaltender.
And I, by the way, will firmly admit you were right last year when you called him a good goaltender. And I scoffed.
Yeah.
I watched him closely this year. He is a decent, decent goalie. He's a good goalkeeper.
Yeah, and that's all they've ever needed. They have never needed a real great goaltender during their run. You know, in the last, 15 to 20 years, who's the best goalie they've had on their team? You know, now they're going to go with Jimmy Howard and Ty Conklin this year. To replace Brian Rafalski, they brought in Ian White, who's somewhat similar. He's got a little bit of offensive flair. Not much else really has changed with this team. They lost all of those veterans, but realistically, other than Rafalski, none of those guys were really contributing to this team.
Oh, certainly. That's what I was thinking earlier. Mike Modano and Chris Osgood, really? How many games did they play between them last year?
I don't know. Maybe 30 or 40.
So let's see if I've got it in front of me. I've got Chris Osgood played 11 games. He was 5-3-2, and he actually played four fewer games than Joey McDonald. And up front, looking for Mike Modano. Mike Modano played 40 games, averaged 12 and a half minutes a game, and he got 15 points. Interesting point, by the way. Mike Modano actually signed a contract with the Dallas Stars for $999,000. $999,999 to honor his number 9 and so that he could retire a Dallas Star.
Huh, interesting.
I would like to suggest to my employer, my old employer, that I sign a $999,000 symbolic contract. And if they are out there, they should call me.
Have you ever worn a number 9?
I'm happy to take a $777,000 contract in honor of my ball hockey number, 77.
I don't think you're likely to get a $77 contract the way you play hockey, my friend.
The way my old employer is, I'd be lucky if I got $7, to be quite frank. All right, give me what you got about Detroit.
Detroit Red Wings, I would say they finished the same way. They finished first in the division and right around the 105-point mark.
So they were 22 games over 500 last year. You think they're in for the same kind of season? 47 wins, 25 losses, 6 overtime losses, 4 shootout losses. So I guess if you count overtime losses and shootout losses, they were actually 12 games over 500.
Right. Yeah. No, I think they finished right around the same spot. I don't think they have significantly improved or regressed as a team.
All right. So you think they take the division?
Yeah.
All righty. I think they're actually going to get about 100 points. And they're going to finish in second place behind Chicago, although it really depends on the goaltending situation in Chicago, on what kind of performance they get from those young backups.
Right.
For me, because if they put in a 500 season similar to what Turco did last year, yeah, Detroit can take them. But if they get any kind of performance from that back end or from those goalkeepers, then I think Chicago's going to take the division. By the way, you didn't give a point total for Chicago earlier. What do you think they're going to do?
So tough. I think they're going to be about 97.
So the same as last year?
I think they had 95 last year.
97, looking at it right now.
I think 98, actually.
All right.
I'm going 98 with my number for Chicago, and I think they finish second in the division, just barely ahead of the next team.
So next up, we're talking about the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Daydreamer.
Yeah.
Okay. Columbus is the team that kind of shook themselves up the most in the offseason. Here is a team that has made the playoffs once in their 11 years in the league.
I believe they got swept.
This is a team that has not even really challenged for a playoff spot very often. So last year they finished fifth. They got 81 points. I think they're going to have a dramatic improvement over last year. They acquired Jeff Carter from Philadelphia for pretty much nobody.
Yeah, Jakub Voracek, I believe, went the other way.
And some picks. That was a first and third round pick this year. So they already got the first round pick from Columbus.
Okay.
So take a look at the signings that they've got. So they not only traded for Jeff Carter in the offseason, they acquired the rights to James Wisniewski and signed him. So they got another big name, or a decent name on the back end. Alexander Giroux, and they signed Vinny Prospel. For any other team, these are minor changes. For Columbus, this is a major upgrade. And James Wisniewski might just be their number one defenseman this year.
Oh, I'm pretty sure he will be.
So the question is he going to play? Because if he keeps on elbowing guys in the head.
Yeah, or making obscene gestures or what have you.
After James Wisniewski, the defensemen are a bunch of nobodies. I mean, we've got Grant Klitsam. we've got Nick Holden, Aaron Johnson, Radek Martinek, Mark Metho, John Moore, Dalton Prout, Chris Russell, David Savard, and Fedor Tuten. And Fedor Tuten is the only name there.
Yeah, I really like what Columbus did from their end, but they had to overpay to get it.
Oh, definitely. What was Wisniewski's salary for this year?
Oh, I think he's on $6 million.
I mean, he doesn't get $6 million anywhere else. They're paying him to play in Columbus. Jeff Carter, even though he was a problem in the dressing room in Philadelphia, I think the problem for a guy like Jeff Carter is he wants to be a big fish in a small pond. And being in a room with guys like Chris Pronger, I think he wasn't able to exert that much control and that much of a personality.
You really think that? You think that he wanted out of Philly?
No, I don't think he wanted out of Philly. I think that one of the reasons that he might not have bought into some of the things that were going on in Philadelphia is because, I mean, I don't think he's a bad guy. It's just that I think he wants to be the guy.
Now, I disagree with you. I think that if he wanted to be the guy, he would have been much more enthused about going to Columbus than he was.
In the interviews I've seen and in the footage I've seen, he's laughing it up with Rick Nash big time. And both of these guys know that they have a potential to be a really strong twosome. Like Cam Neely, Adam Oates big.
With no surrounding cast.
Okay.
And it's those guys and RJ Umberger.
Okay.
I don't know if you get Adam Oates big with nobody to pass the puck to.
Well, you've got Rick Nash and RJ Umberger. I mean, those guys go out there, and if Rick Nash and Jeff Carter each put up 100 points, I think they're pretty happy with that. I don't think these guys have any delusions about winning a cup or going deep in the playoffs right now. I think they're looking at how can they move their stats to that next echelon. And if you're sharing your ice time with guys like Daniel Briere and Mike Richards and some of these other guys, Jeff Carter is never going to score 100 points in that environment. Here, he was skating with Rick Nash. He's got a legitimate shot at 100 points.
Maybe. I'm not sold on that. I'm just not convinced that Jeff Carter is happy. You know, he might have been seen in footage laughing it up with Rick Nash. He was severely choked that Philadelphia basically reneged on a promise to them. You know, they signed him to a long-term deal with a no-trade clause and then traded him at the last possible second before that no-trade clause went into effect. That's a pretty severe kick in the nuts. And I'm not sure that he's going to be – if he does have the ego that you think he has, I don't think he's going to want to play in a hockey nowhere like Columbus.
Well, as I said, I think that he's probably at this point looking at it from the point of view that he now controls his own fate. He's going to have as much ice time as he wants. It's up to him to put up the gaudy numbers that's going to give him the power to control his next step, right? Because if he comes out like a sucky baby and doesn't perform, he's never going to play anywhere else.
But his next step isn't until he's like 30 or 32.
Not necessarily. And first of all, if he doesn't get the next step until then, that's okay because he's still young. This is a young guy.
Yeah.
I mean, there are loads of guys who win their cups after 30. There's nothing stopping him from signing with Detroit or Vancouver or whoever the power is in 6 years.
All right. Well, what do you think about their chances this year?
I think they're going to improve by probably about 7 or 8 points. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I think they're going to flirt with 90 points.
That wouldn't surprise me. If it all comes together for them, if James Wisniewski can quarterback a hugely effective power play, if the spare parts that they've got on the back end can do a reasonable job of keeping the puck out of the net, I think they flirt with 9th or 10th in the conference. But I agree with you. I don't think they get in. The last team that we're going to do before we speak to our guest from Nashville is the St. Louis Blues. This is a team who last year decided to go almost entirely with youth. They have a really great forward core: Chris Stewart, Patrick Berglund, David Perron, David Backes. These guys are all up and coming 60 through 80 point players. Now, the problem that they had last year was that they had absolutely nobody to lead these guys. Paul Kariel was on the roster, but he was concussed. So what they did is they went out, they got themselves a couple of journeymen. Well, they got themselves one journeyman in Jason Arnott and another veteran in Jamie Langenbrunner. These guys are going to be expected to mentor the forward core. And they also brought in Kent Huskins to kind of stabilize the back end as a fifth or a sixth defenseman. I don't know. I'm torn on this. I think that it could all come together for St. Louis, and they could get onto another run like they had 2 or 3 years ago and sneak into the playoffs in the eighth spot. I also think that they could finish dead last in the West.
Wow. That's quite a spread.
It is quite a spread. You know, that's the problem that you have when you're dealing with youth. And they finished fourth in the Central last year, 11th overall. But, you know, there's some teams below them that are going to improve one of these years. You know, Edmonton's going to be coming up. I don't know if Calgary's going to come up this year or ever again, but...
Well, we'll definitely get into that when we talk about the Northwest.
Yeah. Now...
They have Yaroslav Halak in the Nets. This is a potential season saver. I mean, if he turns it on for a season, this is a guy who could get you in the playoffs by himself. The question is, will he?
Yeah. Well, that's the question. You know, he after that fantastic year he had with Montreal, gave him away to St. Louis right afterwards. Everyone was just face-palming, basically, going, what the heck are these guys doing? Going with Carey Price after...
And Carey Price managed to turn those critics away pretty nicely.
Yeah, absolutely. And Yaroslav Halak did exactly the opposite. It really looks like Montreal right call there. And, you know, I'll own it. I was completely wrong about that deal.
I don't think that Halak is a bad player by any stretch of the imagination. I think that he is going to be their number one goaltender again, definitely. He played 57 games last year.
Yeah.
Now, his major backup was Ty Conklin, who we just mentioned.
Has gone to Detroit.
So they've got Brian Elliott.
Formerly of Ottawa, I believe.
Currently penciled in as their backup.
Yeah. And, you know, he was pretty steady. I think he was the number one guy in Ottawa, but...
For a little while. But they've got two goalies who are both 26 years old who are going to carry the load for most of it. I think the players to watch here, other than Jason Arnott and Jamie Langenbrunner, who they're here, as you said, to provide leadership. They've also got Andy McDonald, who's another, he's 34. They do have a couple of players that I think are worth watching. On defense, they've got Carlo Koliakovo, who is... A really good prospect, not prospect anymore, he's 28 years old, was a really good prospect out of Toronto. He hasn't found his game yet, but he's got so much potential. It's hard to believe that he won't play well one of these years. Barrett Jackman is the leader of the defensive core, so it's his job to kind of get Carlo to fall into line. But also, one of the best young defensemen in the league, for my money, Kevin Shattenkirk.
And one of the best names in the league,
also
too.
Has one of the best names in the league. You just beat me to it. Yeah, fabulous young player and a great, great name. Up front, TJ Oshie is a stud. This guy is worth watching. I really like watching him play. He's a Canuck killer already, even at the age of 24. He has scored more goals against Canucks, in my memory, than just about any other player I can think of right now. It seems like every time they play against St. Louis, TJ Oshie walks through a bunch of guys and scores.
Yeah. I don't know. I get confused with all the initials they've got on their team. TJ Oshie, BJ Crombie, and they've got another TJ on there somewhere, I think. They're so, so good, these young guys that they've got. The question is, are they ever going to come together and be a great unit? You know what? I think that I think this year might be their year. They're finally going to piece it together. I think the kids are going to take a step forward with Arnott and Langenbrunner in the room. And I think that they're going to, I think they might sneak into that eighth spot.
They had 87 points last year. I give them low 90s. Still not making the playoffs.
Still not making it. I give them 95 and in.
By the way, the ignominious record I mentioned on the opening.
Yep.
There are two teams in the history of the NHL who have made three Stanley Cup finals without winning one. The Vancouver Canucks, of course, in 1982, 1994, and 2011. And the St. Louis Blues in their first 3 years of existence.
Of course, when they expanded, they were just playing against the other expansion teams.
Original six was one division. The other six teams, the expansion teams, were another division. So their first 3 years, they made the Stanley Cup Finals. And they lost in each of those years, of course, to the Montreal Canadiens and the Boston Bruins.
Women like to slow dance, they like it for the romance. If you won't have a chance, you gotta learn to slow dance.
You had a conversation recently with Buddy Oakes, who runs Preds on the Glass down in Nashville.
Preds on the Glass, of course, is a live podcast out of Nashville.
Yeah, he is a braver man than we.
First of all, braver. Second of all, good-looking fella.
Is he?
And he's well-dressed because we sent him some Canuck stuff a little while ago.
Certainly is.
Buddy was kind enough to give us a call and let us know what he sees at the Nashville Predators training camp. He actually called me from the arena, and here's what he had to say.
With the playoff run that you guys had last year, and given Vancouver all that they could handle in that second round, what expectations are there for the Preds moving forward? Before, it was always, we make the playoffs, and we're pretty much out in one. And that was like an annual ritual. And now you've made it to the second round. So is that good enough? Or are people looking to go further? Or are they pretty happy with what happened last year?
I think there's a sense of urgency to really make a push to win the Cup this year. With Shea Weber wanting a Cup and wanting a long-term deal, with Ryan Suter and Pekka Rinne, both are in contract years. You've got other people in contract years like Jordan Tutu and Sergei Kostich and a long list of people. This blend of youth and youthful experience is something that really could turn into a run. I think the pieces are in place. They may pick up another score or two at some point towards the trade deadline, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I don't think anybody's complacent. I think that the Cup is the only goal at this point.
Okay, now one thing that you might have noticed there is he started talking about a Stanley Cup window for Nashville.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it either.
And he's obviously a very knowledgeable guy. He knows a lot about these players. Does he see something we don't see?
Well, you know, the Barry Trotz style is one that really lends itself to the playoffs, as we saw last year.
They did give the Canucks all they could handle.
Yeah. Boy, I don't know.
Last year was the first year they've ever won a series. I don't see him jumping to a Stanley Cup.
And they certain, you know what, I will agree with him. If they have a Stanley Cup window, it is right now, because I don't think Shea Weber stays with this team long term.
Weber signed a big one-year deal.
Yeah.
I don't see him staying past that, unfortunately.
If he wanted to stay, he would have signed.
Much like Drew Doughty did.
He's going to unrestricted free agency, and they're going to have to pay through the teeth to keep Shea Weber.
Well, they already are.
Yeah, they're already at or above their Shea Weber budget, and they're going to have to go higher.
Well, they're going to have to pay Pekka Rinne massive dollars to stay.
Yes.
I don't know. I think if they're going to win, they're going to win this year, but I don't see it. I'm sorry, buddy. I like you, and I really wish you all the luck. And if the Predators win, I'll buy one of these new ugly mustard jerseys.
If they win the Cup, you will buy a mustard yellow Predators jersey?
Yes.
Will you wear it?
No, I won't wear it at all.
You know what? Come on. I think you should man up. If they win the Cup, you will need to change your profile picture on the Pucked in the Head website to you wearing a mustard yellow Predators jersey.
For the entire off season.
Okay, there you go.
Certainly. And I will say this is all reliant upon my wife agreeing to me buying one of these jerseys. Because last year I promised to buy a jersey of the captain who won the Stanley Cup. I'm still not able to do that because I love you, honey, but you're squeezing the purse screens a little tight and I can't get a Char jersey without her permission.
Oh, well.
If somebody out there in Pucked in the Headland wants to buy me a jersey of Zdeno Chara, I will be happy to wear it, be photographed in it, and do whatever embarrassing thing you would like me to do in it, as long as it doesn't involve any kind of nudity. And yeah, there it is. I'll whore myself out to your buying me a Boston Bruins jersey.
Well, yeah, that's what jumped out at me from your interview with Buddy, was that he thought they had a chance to win the cup this year, and I don't think they do. They lost some offense last year, which isn't of huge concern given the way that they play hockey, but they didn't really replace it with anything.
Well, they went out and got Nicholas Bergforce and Zach Stortini. I mean, these are players that fit into their mold, but they're not a Steve Sullivan. They don't have a creative puck skill, you know?
Yeah, Bergforce is a real money ball type player.
He's a baseball player?
Well, he's a guy who really, a lot of people who go into the deep statistics of the NHL thought really underperformed last year and could really have a career year this year in the right situation. But the Nashville Predators as a team, I think they will be lucky to repeat their point total from last year, which was
99 points, second in the division.
I don't see them getting back there. I think St. Louis has improved. I think Columbus has improved, and I think that's going to detract from Nashville.
I agree. I think Nashville's going to take a little step back. I think they're good for 95 points.
Yeah, you know what? I was just going to say I will put them at 95 right with St. Louis, and it's going to come down to a tiebreaker. I think that pretty much wraps up our division preview of the Central Division.
So you have how many teams out of this division make them in the playoffs? I've got Chicago in first, Detroit in second, Nashville barely in third, and I've got Nashville squeaking into the playoffs.
I have Detroit winning, I have Chicago in second, and I have St. Louis and Nashville tied at 95 points for 8th and 9th. And just let me toss a coin here. I think Nashville gets into the 8th spot.
All right, there you go. I've also got Rick Nash, by virtue of playing with Jeff Carter, he's going to go from 66 points to possibly in the 90s. I think it's going to make that big of a difference on that team.
All right. Well, it's certainly going to be an interesting division to watch. This is going to be one of the more competitive divisions in the league this year, I think.
All right. Well, thank you, Chris.
Jason, good to talk to you as always.
And next time out, we are going to talk about the Pacific Division.
All right. I look forward to it. Take care.
Let me speak plain. I've got to sit and wait for my mouth to catch up to my brain. Time is spinning clockwise down the drain. Come back to me soon, because I'll soon be out of range. I'm feeling able as Cain. I only take these for pain. Broke out of rehab just like Ahab in that book by Mark Twain. Don't you worry, I'll see you back here again. I don't mean to complain, but it's familiar terrain. I'm firing melon balls and cannons on the Spanish Main, but I'm alright. It's just a red wine stain. It's all too normal now, when once it seems so strange. Time for a slightly more sane. I'm riding shotgun with my stomach, and we're ready for fame.
What does Umberger play?
Hockey?
Shut up.
Which arena are you in?
We're over at Centennial Sportsplex. This is where the Predators have the training facilities as well as where they practice all the time except for game days.
So if we have any pops and hisses and background noise, we apologize for that. But Buddy is on site and calling all the way from Nashville. What is the biggest thing you're looking forward to this year? Biggest news in the offseason obviously was signing Shea Weber to a pretty big dollar contract for 1 year.
That took all summer to get it done, and it really wasn't what the fans were looking for. Everybody wanted to see a long-term contract. Shea is basically waiting to see what the Predators are going to do. He wants to win the Stanley Cup. That's his number one goal in his career. Probably rather do it in Nashville than anyplace else, but he wants to wait and see what the Predators do with some other moves, whether or not they re-sign Pekka-Rinne at the end of this season and also Ryan Suter, who are both up for contracts. They both have indicated they wanted to stay here, but then again, Shea Weber said the same thing. He's only signed for this year, and then they're pretty much guaranteed another year after that before he becomes an unrestricted free agent.
What is it that you're looking forward to then? What do you think are the big things that are going to happen this year? Is it more of the same of what you had last year, or do you have some faces in the locker room that are going to mean some different things on the ice for the Preds?
Yeah, it's a totally different situation this year. We have a lot younger team. There's 55 players in camp, and 50 of the 55 are under 30, which is incredibly young for a camp like this. There's a lot of positions open for a change. Four defensive positions are probably pretty well set with Weber and Suter and Klein and John Blum, who will also be a rookie this year, even though he played 20 games or so last year. But there's six or seven guys that are vying for those last two or three defensive positions. A couple of somewhat veterans, Jack Hillen from Long Island's here, and Tyler Sloan, who was kind of a mostly scratch in Washington, but he was there for pretty much most of the last season. But then you add into the mix all the rookies that really want to be here. Probably the one everybody's heard the most about is Ryan Ellis, who has won everything he could possibly win in juniors. And then there's also Roman Josi. There's a bit of a veteran, Timu Laakso, who played with the Predators last year a few games, but he was up here a good bit of the time as a scratch. You got those two. You've got a guy named Ekholm from Sweden, who's over here, who's a big guy, has a lot of promise. So, I mean, you've got a lot of people in camp. On the offensive side, you don't really have that many slots open. There's some young guys that are really making a move. Craig Smith, who played with the Team USA at the World Championships last year, he came in last week in the rookie game and scored four goals on Monday night and then two goals on Tuesday. So he's got six goals and assists in two rookie games, and that was a pretty big splash. And he's going to be vying for position. You also have some of the people coming back from last year. You've got Blake Jeffrion, who played 20 games and is still considered a rookie, but he's going to have to earn a spot on this team. You've got Taylor Beck, who has done well in juniors and really wants to make the team. Not real sure that this is going to be his year. He may be up at some point during the year. You have young guy Austin Watson. He would really have to make a big splash because he's going to have to go back to juniors. He's got a January birthday, and he's either going to have to stay here or go back to Petersburg. So you've got a lot of players like that. Cal O'Reilly, who did well at the start of last year and then was injured and then was scratched during the playoffs, never did make it back onto the ice. So there's a lot of open competition here in camp, and that's something that we really hadn't seen in the past few years.
You follow this team on a daily basis. You know all of the rookies and the nuances of what's going on line to line and defense pairing. How about the average guy out there in Nashville? What are they looking forward to this year?
You know, I think there's probably a little bit of hesitancy for them to really buy in, even though that the level of excitement is probably the highest it's ever been. At this point, I think that some of the players that left due to going other places for higher contracts, like Joel Ward, there's no way the Predators were going to pay him $3 or $4 million to come back and play the role he was playing. Steve Sullivan was a longtime fan favorite, is in Pittsburgh. Seems to have new life up there. Really looking forward to seeing what he does up there. So they're going to be missing some people that they're used to seeing around the rink, you know. But I think there's going to be enough with the ones that were here, that are here now, that are going to make them forget them pretty quickly. One thing Barry Trott said yesterday, it's a young team, but there's a lot of players here that did come in and play during that last 30 games or so last year and then the playoffs. And he said that experience right there equates to pretty much a full season. So even though people like John Blum and Blake Gifford are rookies, they've got plenty of experience that's going to translate into being a little bit better on the ice than you expect out of players that age.
Folks in Vancouver know a lot about John Blum. He played junior with the Vancouver Giants. A lot of us here know his game pretty well.
Yeah, he spent the summer up there, too. He was back up there. I think he's just been back in town a couple of weeks. Kind of a funny story about him is that he's been going out with a lot of the other rookies here and going to dinner every night, and they play the credit card game. And he's got a winning streak of five in a row where he hadn't had to pay. And the other guys are all minor leaguers and aren't making the money that he's making. And it's kind of funny that he keeps winning, but he's been on Twitter talking about it every night. So I don't know how he came out last night.
Well, he'll have to be careful because the vets on the team will get him once they get into the regular season, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it may have been a little bit late last year when he and Blake Gifford came up from to get into too many pranks, but I'm sure we'll see a few before it's over this year.
What about now? Obviously, Pekka is the big guy in net. What do you got going on for backup? Is anybody going to push him, or is he going to play 60, 70 games?
He's going to play a lot, but I think last year Anders Lindback came on strong. It was funny. I talked to Barry Trotz over the summer, and he said, I asked him if there was a defining moment in the season last year, and he said it was in the first game when Pekka Rinne got hurt, and they had to put Lindback in to take over two periods into the first game, and Rinne was out for a couple of weeks at that point, and they went on and were the last undefeated team in the league at the start of the year last year. So it was a defining moment that Lindback, who was a total unknown, never played in North America, was able to come in and take over. And so far in camp this year, there's no sign that anybody's going to be pushing Lindback. So I think Lindback will probably get a little more work this year voluntarily as opposed to by injury. I think that you could easily see Pekka play somewhere around 60 games and Lindback pick up the rest of them if there's not an injury along the way. The top minor leaguer they had that was next in line probably to move up was Mark Dukanich, and he's in Columbus now as a free agent signing and is backing up Steve Mason there. Chet Pickard is a Western Hockey League guy that a lot of people out there may know, that he had an absolutely horrible year last year, but he came up and practiced with the team during the playoffs and seems to have found renewed vigor here in the preseason. So he and Jeremy Smith are probably the next two in line that will be playing in Milwaukee this year.
With the playoff run that you guys had last year, and given Vancouver all that they could handle in that second round, what expectations are there for the Preds moving forward? Before, it was always, we make the playoffs, and we're pretty much out in one. And that was it. That was like an annual ritual. And now you've made it to the second round. So is that good enough? Or are people looking to go further? Or are they pretty happy with what happened last year?
I think there's a sense of urgency to really make a push to win the Cup this year. With Shea Weber wanting a Cup and wanting a long-term deal, with Ryan Suter and Pekka Rinne, both are in contract years. You've got other people in contract years like Jordan Tutu and Sergei Kostichin, a long list of people. This blend of youth and youthful experience is something that really could turn into a run. I think the pieces are in place. They may pick up another score or two at some point towards the trade deadline, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I don't think anybody's complacent. I think that the Cup is the only goal at this point.
Well, it sounds like there's quite a bit of activity there at your end of the things, so I'll let you go, buddy. I'm going to add a few things, but obviously you want to give a plug to your blog and your podcast?
Yeah, we every day have updates at Preds on the Glass, everything Predators. We also have a couple of different podcasts going right now, along with Ryan Porth. We have RLD Hockey Talk, which is generally on Wednesdays, which is kind of a league-wide type of podcast. A lot of great guests from across North America. And then on Fridays, we have Smashville on the Glass podcast, and that's more Fred-centric. Both of them are at noon Central Time, which would be mid-morning, 10 o'clock y'all's time. So everybody tune in and listen and read Fred's on the Glass for everything you want to know about the Predators.
All of us on the Pucked in the Head podcast, you can't see the video feed from where he's sitting, but right behind Buddy in the wall, there are about 100 holes in the wall from various pucks that have hit the wall. So, Buddy, while you're there, just take it easy, all right? And watch for flying pucks.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.